Today's show comes to you thanks to Ofakind, an online shop for emerging design. For more information, visit ofakind.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Leyte Sue. What do I do when I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? Out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brand startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. I recently headed out to SF and the Bay Area to talk to chefs, sommeliers, restaurateurs, and other food friends for our SF sessions, not live, but on location. So on today's Word of Mouth, we're recording on April 28th from the studios of our partner company, Stitcher. It's a handy app that you can use to listen to your favorite radio shows on demand and on the go. We're here in the studio with Stuart Brioza and Nicole Krasinski, chefs, husband and wife, and owners of State Bird Provisions in San Francisco, still the toughest table to get in town. They won James Beard Best New Restaurant 2013 and Best New Restaurant Bon Appetit in 2012. Hello, Stuart and Nicole.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
So, State Bird is a super unique place, and it's so wonderful to get reconnected with you two, because 2 years ago I stayed in the Cow Hollow neighborhood of San Francisco and really wanted to shoot myself, because and nobody would do it for me because it's a fairly, you know, clean-cut neighborhood, but, you know, I felt like it just felt like the Upper East Side in New York City, which isn't my favorite neighborhood, no offense. And then I wore my yoga clothes the entire time because
you wanted to fit in.
It's very, yeah, fit in, and it's also very hilly, so there was no room for me to, you know, do my usual dress and heels.
No.
And then I was fortuitous enough to think, oh, well, this restaurant sounds interesting. And this is sort of before some of the accolades. And then I watched from afar as you guys got all these tremendous mentions. But anyway, more importantly, is I ran up and down hills, and then I found myself at the restaurant fairly early in the evening, mm-hmm. and I was by myself. The best way to do it is to eat alone, and I was doing that one top standing next to the door, mm-hmm. and throughout the rest of the night, I just interacted with your entire staff,
yeah.
and because the portions are so manageable, as a one person, I was able to try a bunch of stuff, and everyone who came to the restaurant later on in the night, those regular people who like to dine with one other person at least, they looked on enviously.
Because, Yeah, you were like the perfect diner. I remember that night, and you were like the perfect diner, you know. And that was when we had our little standing bar that was right next to the front door. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully it was like a warm night, because there used to be the wind used to blow in, and just that area was, you know, very cold and could be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't like the right spirited person, you know, it could turn sour. It could be a tough sell, exactly. But, you know, I remember in the early days, people would be like, you know, I went to State Bird and they made me stand by the door. we would only offer those standing bar seats, which I totally loved, because they were like, you know, what Nicole called it,
the sweet spot.
Oh,
because it was right next to the pastry kitchen, and you just sort of like talk to the, you know, you're practically in the kitchen, and
ushering people in as they walk through the door, telling them where to go.
Yeah, but we never we never made anybody stand there. Only those who were up for it, and like, you know, we'd always promise that it would be super fun,
And often those people would share food so yeah. they could try more. You may have even
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You probably shared with other guests.
Yeah, I did. Some people looked on and I was like, here, have some. Because if you have some of mine, I'll be able to order
exactly.
more.
Yeah.
But yeah, some people really love that Sandy Bar. And they're actually like bummed today. Like they're you know, we expanded and kind of cut that out. And we actually put seats kind of, you know, they're tight and they're similar kind of atmosphere and feeling at the standing bar, except that there's stools to sit on now.
I was bummed when I didn't realize that you had expanded the restaurant. Congratulations. Much needed for us who love to dine at State Bird. And I was like, where's that table that I stood at, you know? Like, my friend was like, that's definitely State Bird. I'm like, no, that's not State Bird. Like, I've been here before.
We saw you walk by a few times.
Yeah, my table is not here. My standing table. And I'm sure walking in with, like, neon sneakers and, like, a multicolored running jacket, which some people have said, you know, you look like a Chinese mother. I'm sure that made me look like I might be
so
down
you fit
for
right
it.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
my God.
Mission
it was,
hipster right
it
there.
Was, like, perfect. Well, it's not really hipsters. The area right above the restaurant is sort of, like, yoga moms and a lot of, like, places to get facials and massages, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Well, once you cross Geary, it all changes, and we're right on that other side.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well,
it's got its own identity.
Love it. And so the restaurant has expanded, and construction has started on a new place next door.
Yes.
Getting ready to start.
It was a really beautiful space. Tell us what it looks like. I got a chance to see it. And the plan for this new restaurant, like what's it called, what kind of food?
Yeah, we'll start off with what it's called. It's going to be called The Progress.
Okay.
And the building that we're in, it's an old movie theater. It's an old movie theater that you would never be able to tell that it was a movie theater, except for little snippets within the building. And, you know, we found this just one picture is all we could really locate through a book called Old Theaters of, or, you know, Theaters of San Francisco. And it dates back to the turn of the century. And part of it was we were trying to search for a name and found this picture, and it had the address, and we could totally, we knew what it was because we're right next to the Fillmore building. And the Fillmore, prior to being the Fillmore, was an old hotel. And you could still see very faintly, like, the hotel sign. So it was like I matched that up, and it was, like, clear that that's what it was.
Huh.
So, you know, when we saw the picture, we immediately were like, The Progress. What a great name. You
so
know?
It's called
The name Progress. The name of the theater was The Progress.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to name the restaurant.
That's
the
I was Progress. Wondering about that, actually.
Yeah. So it's – and it just seems like it's a word that is, you know, kind of stands to for, you know, restaurants and, you know, I mean, you know, kind of just as people who love to create tastes and foods and, you know, and atmospheres and such, that it makes a lot of sense, you know.
It makes much sense, especially with the backstory of how, I mean, this is going to be, as you say, your dream restaurant. And the State Bird was kind of the project.
One that was never meant to happen.
Yeah, the accidental baby.
Yeah.
And then the accidental baby was more of a handful and sort of more more perfect than we could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
Well put.
Yeah. So describe that.
How this all happened,
you know?
Well, you know, when we were looking for a space in San Francisco, we had never even considered this particular area or even the Fillmore or any of it. It just wasn't really on our radar. And, you know, we live not far from it, about 10 minutes or 15 minutes walking. And, you know, I after our son was born, we had been negotiating for a space kind of, you know, not far from the Mission District area, really cool old factory space. And, you know, it just had gone through rezoning. It was clear that that wasn't going to happen. And, you know, after talking to the city and kind of going through the preliminary app meetings, you know, it was evident that it was just dead in the water. So we pulled out, and you know, after Jasper was born, which is our son's name, and you know, it was like, all right, we gotta get serious here. So we expanded our search basically, and I looked at a space kind of right off of Fillmore Street, and you know, I was on my bicycle. My, you know, the gal, our broker who was showing us the space, basically said, hey, you know, there's this really unique space right across the street, you know, down a few blocks on Fillmore. It's kind of a funky area, but, you know, it's got a lot of the character that you're looking for, right? And, you know, a lot of that, what we were looking for was a building or a space that had some sense of history to it, you know, that, you know, was in a neighborhood that we could really buy into, which, again, we didn't originally totally get excited about where we're at. But, you know, it grows, and you sort of make a commitment. Right. You do it. And I remember peeking in the windows, and I could barely see. And I was like, well, I think what I see looks interesting enough to go and check it out. And so Nicole was still at home with Jasper. I mean, it was like literally like a week after he was born. So
you guys really got to move on.
Yeah, I was like, I got to, like, that parental instinctual, like, I got to take care of my family, like, kicked in, like, big time.
Trying to figure out what your nest is going to
look
like.
Yeah, I was like, all right, I got to, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? Like, I figured it out. And I went to go look at the space. And the first space that the landlord took me through was what is now the State Bird, which was probably the ugliest thing that I had ever set foot in.
It smelled
like an old grease trap because it had been kind of ripped from the pipes and it was just exposed. And it was like 80 years of plaster all over the building inside, and painted this god-awful, like, kind of this purpley, splotchy color.
It's very hard to envision it being anything of
the
interest.
Skylights were covered with, like, ductwork, and so you could hardly make them out. And anyway, yeah, it was hard. What was your first instinct in that?
I saw it post already talking about doing both, so
my perspective was slightly different.
But I was a little, and it was much smaller. We moved a wall back, so the bones of it were not quite.
Well, it's hard to envision something when you haven't gone through, like, a whole construction project, right, before, and you realize that there's a lot that's possible,
right?
And anyway, so the landlord had taken us through, and the only thing it had was it had all the makings for a restaurant. It was zoned for a restaurant. It had a hood, you know, which was right in the front, kind of the same place where our hood is now. And so clearly the kitchen would be in the front and then this area in the back. And but then, you know, of course, he took us to the jewel of the building just after, you know. So we walked through, and the building was much different. It was cut up in three different spaces and second floors, and everything was kind of covered. And all of a sudden, we walk into what is the progress, and it like blew my mind. I mean, the space was just gorgeous. It had all of the characteristics that we had been looking for. It had, like, interesting light. And if you just sort of closed your eyes, I mean, if you just looked through the front, you could have imagined that you're anywhere in San Francisco, and that it didn't matter once you were in this space, right? And so that's kind of what really sold us on it. We didn't even consider the State Bird space at all. It was until several weeks into negotiations, and landlord, I think, he basically made us an offer about the State Bird space, and, you know, or about that space, saying, you know, after realizing it was going to take some time to go through, you know, zoning and, you know, some of the SF, you know,
hurdles
that we would have to go through. Thank you. And, you know, it was very clear that maybe this was a smart idea. Because we need to figure out a way to generate some income. And so we kind of had the same thought. And, you know, I think thinking about, well, maybe while this is going through all of its hurdles and zoning and such, we can, you know, do something simple.
Yeah.
Quick.
Like, you know, you're doing the private chefing, the dinner parties, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a dinner party every night. Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that.
And we kind of had we had been talking about the idea of a dim sum bar for many years, jokingly saying, you know, once we open our dream restaurant years and years later, we'll just do something fun, like a dim sum bar. So,
yeah, totally like one of those cool
really
ideas that was on the back burner.
We really didn't think through the logistics, and we just opened and said, fuck it, we can cook delicious food. Hopefully people will come and buy it, and we'll figure out how it gets served.
Right, because, and to even frame it another way that makes it sound even more zany is an hors d'oeuvres party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was kind of like – it was like, wouldn't it be cool to do this, like, standing hors d'oeuvre restaurant where there was no seats? And then we're like, nah, that's not going to really be popular. I think people like to sit. So,
you're like, scratch that idea.
Yeah. So we did. That's where the standing bar came in. Because I was like, I really wanted this standing element to it. And, but we were watching. I remember after we opened, people were like, "You really? You want me to stand?" And I was just like watching people like leave. And I was like, if I had a seat there, they'd stay, right? I mean, they're already in the restaurant. And here I'm just like watching people. Like one out of ten, you know, would stay and stand. And they were the troopers. And So, we obviously put chairs in later, realizing that we were just, like, losing money, watching it just walk right out the door.
And also realizing we could put more food out of that kitchen than we thought.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah. Well, and, you know, so, yeah, we just kind of restructured our whole plan and signed two leases, mm-hmm. basically, one for the Progress and one for State Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't tell anybody about the Progress because we're like, we're not really sure this is going to work out. Didn't even really tell the landlord.
Brilliant PR move, by the way. So we keep those cards close to your chest.
Yeah, keep them close because, you know, really we're thinking that maybe State Bird wasn't going to work out so well. we kind of retooled our business plan. It was far less expensive, which was, in hindsight, very smart because mm-hmm. we hadn't been proven as restaurateurs yet. And so it was really hard to raise money. I mean, I think a lot of it was like, you know, you're going to call it what? You're going to do this where? And then the last was like, and how are you going to serve the food? Like, are you sure this is a good idea? No, I'm not. But yes, of course. This is going to be the best thing ever. And you just sort of big smile on your face trying to tell, you know, get people to believe in you. And it ended up working out pretty well.
So for folks – oh, sorry.
But as we got closer mm-hmm. and we started writing the menu, we couldn't write the menu. We had no idea. Like, we're like, this is really challenging. Like, how are we going
to
figure this
out? Get the balance right.
Yeah, so we decided – I mean, literally just a few days before that we opened, that we weren't going to have a menu. And so the first 2 weeks of the restaurant being open, we had no menu.
Everything was passed.
Just like whatever we wanted to cook, it was just like passed. And we had
even
kind of some.
Kind of brilliant because the menu part of the whole thing is kind of a painful part.
Kind of, but not really. It's brilliant for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was like there was a point where we're like, this is, you know, we're genius. Like, we don't even have to write a menu.
Okay.
We just serve food. But then, like, what happened were, like, the complaints started coming in. And people would be like, you know, you call yourself State Bird Provisions, and you're, like, tolling this fried quail dish, and I never saw it. And, you know, so it became this kind of thing where, like, ooh, okay, maybe there should be something that guarantees that people can –
have some control.
Dish,
okay.
Which is, you know, hence this idea of like a little bit of a menu. So we went through about 6 or 7 different iterations mm-hmm. in the first 30 days. I mean, really changing it up. We went from no menu to a complete menu, right? Everything that we were cooking was on something. Then we went to partial, and then we went to different service style, and we had all of these. Yeah, it was really kind of quirky.
Our service staff was very patient.
Yeah, they just totally believed in us. And many of them
they
were...
They would come to work and be like, what are we doing tonight, Chad? How are we doing this menu? Okay.
How are we doing this today? Yeah.
This kind of like, in my head, I imagine like people throwing their hands up like on stage being like, jazz hands.
Yeah, exactly. There was definitely like a good amount of improv. Mm-hmm. And luckily our service, like, you know, we just kept talking about like, okay, well, we may not... You know, if we don't tell them that we don't know what we're doing, then they're not going to really know, right? That old Julia Child saying about, you know, just sort of like, don't tell them. The chances are they won't know that the sauce is wrong, right? You know? Or, you know, and so it's sort of like, you know, subscribe to that philosophy. And then also we're just like, just big smiles, everyone.
Yep. And you know? And the classic rule of improv.
Kill them with kindness.
Yes,
you know?
And. Yes, yeah. And. Never negating your partners,
right?
And the team. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Interested in emerging design? Check out Of a Kind, a site that sells the pieces and tells the stories of up-and-coming makers. The site has featured over 200 designers and offers limited edition pieces that you can't find anywhere else, along with studio tours, travel guides, and even recipes from the designers. To find out more, head to ofakind.com and sign up for the site's newsletter.
So for folks who... have not had the opportunity at State Bird yet, or maybe won't get to. Let's walk through how it feels like to go to State Bird today. Like, what is it like? Like, what kind of dishes? You know, what to expect?
Yeah.
Just because it's so zany. I don't usually ask this question, you know.
Yeah. Well, what are they?
Yeah.
There's about 38 dishes
that
total.
Many?
I think
right
so.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So on the menu. And so the items on the carts and trays are not on the menu. The things that are passed around get passed around throughout the night. And the mm-hmm. cart, for instance, has the same things on it all night long. There are multiple carts.
Okay.
There's one cart, mainly seafood, and then the trays have other items. So come in, you sit down, maybe a server, maybe a cook, maybe a manager will mm-hmm. greet you and
wow.
give you the spiel
mm-hmm.
on how it's going to work.
How it's going to work, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the stuff on the cart is a little bit more kind of Wild Wild West. I mean, not the stuff on the cart. Actually, yeah, the stuff on the cart is more Wild Wild West. The stuff on the menu, you can know that you can ask for it. You can order it. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, it's like what we basically say is that there's about a dozen or so dishes that are passed around.
Got it.
On trays and mm-hmm. carts. And there's and then, you know, kind of there's – and then we also just really encourage the idea that there's really no rules to this.
Right.
You know, kind of grab food. When you're ready to order something. We'll kind of help guide and, you know, keep it at that. And there's just like a nice influx of food that's constantly, you know, coming out of the kitchen. And, you know, chances are that we build the dishes on the trays to sell out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when we go out, we have six of something.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, the idea is that six is going to sell. But then we'll do, in 15 minutes or so later, we'll do another round of that same dish and kind of hit the dish. There's a bit of a strategy involved.
Of course, yeah.
And we've just gotten much better at doing this and
mm-hmm.
kind of striking that really great balance.
Sounds like just a really, really intense dinner party.
it's super high energy. Yes. I mean, you come in and it's... You know, I mean, there's just things coming at you in every which way. And it's really intense. It can be intense, especially that first seating. You know, we put out about 200 plates or so
wow.
in the first 30 minutes that we
Whoa.
Opened.
Whoa, okay.
I mean, really, like, we are cooking and going. I mean, when
yeah.
people get
You sit
greeted,
down, you're fed. You sit down.
Yeah, yeah.
2 minutes later, you have food on your table and you're eating. There's no lag time between
mm-hmm.
ordering and
mm-hmm.
waiting and getting beverages.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just go.
Yeah, things really move. So.
Like a Chinese restaurant. We're efficient.
It is. Yeah. I mean, really what it came down to was borrowing that idea.
Mm-hmm.
We love
like,
that idea.
The efficiencies.
That was our favorite thing about going to.
Yeah. Yeah. You're pulling your chair out and grabbing.
We don't like to wait.
You know, like, bam, let's go. Let's get this going.
Nothing to do.
Yeah. How did you two first meet?
We met in college
okay.
in Cupertino, California, not far, just south of San Francisco, in photography, studying art and photography together, old school, dark room style.
All right. And, okay, so really, really, how did you meet? Like, who, what, who said hi to whom.
It was simultaneous. We were in I think in the lab together. Ooh. You know, like looking at prints or doing whatever, and we had a couple classes together, and the story is, so we met just in classes, and then Stuart, his mother works for the airlines, and he was able to get standby tickets to go to New York. And so we had come up to San Francisco, a group of us, four of us, and gone to the MoMA, I think the month it opened, to see a photography exhibit.
Yeah.
And we had such a good time that he said to us one day, why don't we go to New York? I can get dirt cheap tickets. We can stay some random hotel that you had to write a letter to request a room.
This is like way pre-internet. And so, like, yeah, we had to write a letter and wait for that. And, you know, like.
You mean you can't call to get a hotel room?
Not this particular
place. You had to write a letter. Yeah. Like, I would like one room.
That's really cute.
Yeah, it was really, because we called them. I called them and they said, oh, you have to write, like, on a 3x5 card. It's like, this is so random. But, okay, cool. Why not? Let's go.
So we end up flying to New York.
The two of
the four,
four of us.
There was four of us.
Group of us. Okay.
And Stuart, he was already cooking at the time, and he said, you know, the only thing is that when we go, I want to go to this restaurant. And it was.
I want to go to a fine restaurant.
Yeah.
And really have like a New York experience like a high end restaurant.
Yeah.
And I had asked my chef, who I worked for at that time, you know, where should I go and eat, what would be a great meal to take from. And it was like 95, I think, 94. Yeah.
95.
Yeah, and he had said Gotham Bar and Grill. And so
that's where we went.
Yeah.
And guess what? They're just having, tonight they're having their 30th birthday party.
Amazing.
Which I was going to go to, but
amazing.
I'm here.
And Chef Alfred Portal was just at State Bird.
This year.
Really?
A couple of months ago.
3 months ago.
I think
ago.
It was two months ago. And
That is crazy.
We had met him in New York, and he was really excited to come. And his wife has got family here. Mm-hmm. And
he's a dapper gentleman.
Very dapper.
Yeah.
Very dapper.
Just really, really memorable experience.
But I had never been to a restaurant like that before. And
Stuart jokes.
Any of us.
Before I met Nicole, she never ate at a restaurant, period, in her life. She's never been to a restaurant. Yeah. Before us.
She's like, what? Quite. They make me wear shoes here? I don't know how I feel about this place.
But so we weren't dating then. We were just friends.
Okay, but
here we were in New York.
Were you eyeing? Were you like, did you have a crush on her?
Yes.
Okay. You had a crush on each other. Okay, cool.
Yes.
Okay, then what?
But a year passed before anything.
Oh, wow.
Happened. But the trip to New York was very significant.
Yeah, I move quick.
Okay. I mean, did you guys like kiss or
on this trip? No, not on this trip.
Okay.
No.
So late. So you were
months and months later.
You got to know each other.
We did. We got to know each other and we had
better and faster
experience.
Okay.
Kind of.
But he also cooked for you.
And he also cooked for me. I was a vegetarian before I met.
Gulp.
And I went to see him at the restaurant he was working at, and he cooked duck mushu, and it just totally blew my mind.
it was a really good dish.
That's all it took,
It was a really good dish, yeah. Yeah, I was like, you know, you didn't come all this way to eat vegetables.
You know, I remember that, like,
try
the
this
sweet
duck dish.
Sauce was like, what is going on? And duck.
Sweet, salty, and a little cloudier pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some exact quotes that are just seared into my brain where, from Nicole, where you said you went with a girlfriend, you go visit the cook or chef or whatever. Stuart was all sweaty. He's probably in the weeds.
Yeah.
like I
it was a big restaurant. I was working the saute station, and it was just like
open kitchen. Those guys were cranking.
Yeah,
I'm sure, like, having this the apple of your eye come by, like, kind of like turned up the adrenaline notch a little bit. You're like, I gotta perform. Yeah. You guys are so cute. You know what? I love the description that you have of your dad, Stuart. Like, he sounded like quite the foodie before the word foodie was ever.
Oh, not at all.
No?
I mean, he was like a, you know, like, he just I feel like that he had, like, the, you know, the important things in his fridge were, like, you know, bologna. And
but he'd fry it.
I mean, you know, he would fry bologna. Yeah. He wasn't much of the cook, but he had a couple of things that he did.
Tricks.
That, you know, as did my mom. My mom was far more of a cook.
Okay.
I mean, you know, she still has the original, like, fried chicken pot that we use. It's, like, real thin-gauged aluminum pot that's, like, blackened. And my father's got, you know, he would – yeah, he would – you know, my mom worked for the airlines, so he was charged with having to feed my brother and I when we were kids when she was out of town.
Okay.
And, you know, on the weekends for sure. And so –
what did
she
do for airlines?
She's a flight attendant.
Okay.
Yeah, TWA.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, part of, I think, you know, we traveled the world growing up.
Cool.
You know, kind of on standby. Mm-hmm. My father would make these, you know, very simple – somewhat elaborate things, you know. He'd basically, like, nothing was fresh, right? That's real important. Everything was, like, really, like, you know, where my mom was the opposite of that. But my father would, you know, he'd pull out the bologna, you know, and fry it and then pull it on, like, the, you know, whatever our little Wonder Bread was, you know, and, you know, make a sauce, you know, from two condiments, ketchup and mayonnaise, and mix them together and put it on and then throw a fried egg into it. And, you know, I mean, I think one of my favorites was always having he'd throw a scoop of ice cream onto our breakfast cereal, you know, and that was like, you know, I mean, that worked, you know, it worked really well.
It's kind of brilliant. It's frankly sounds like Christina Tosi's desserts over at Milk Bar.
Most definitely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think, you know.
Or
yeah.
Humphrey Slocum.
Yeah.
Secret breakfast.
Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, he wasn't alone in that. I'm sure a lot of kids have that memory of it. But yeah, I do remember.
It's the first time I ever heard this.
The ice cream on cereal.
It makes perfect sense.
Really.
It's really good.
So is it the proportion of,
you put your milk, you got to put everything in it.
Because
you
got to
have
milk
the whole
too.
Cereal
okay.
experience.
Oh, my God.
But then you just top it off with a scoop of, like, I don't know, whatever was in
vanilla.
Vanilla, probably.
Probably French vanilla.
Yeah, French vanilla, yeah. Yeah, that, like, weird kind of yellowy kind of French vanilla.
That's even more intense. I thought you were talking about a scoop of ice cream with cereal sprinkled on top.
Oh, no. It was a bowl
it's
of
like
cereal
an add-on
that you just,
bonus.
Like, boop. Pop a scoop of ice cream in there.
Brilliant.
Yeah. This Saturday mornings. Like,
it's like a floater.
It's
like an ice cream floater for the milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Nicole? What do your parents do? Did they do?
As far as food growing up?
As far as what they, like, who were they? What did they do for a living?
Oh, my mom, she was a stay-at-home mom, so she cooked quite a lot.
Okay.
Everything from scratch. That's where I got my baking.
Your love
thumb.
For baking.
Yes, she has photos of me at the age of three rolling out dough and making cookies.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So we ate a lot of organic produce from the backyard. Our neighbor had an amazing backyard orchard, apricots and plums and pomegranates.
Oh, wow.
And it's still one of my favorite food memories is sitting on our washing machine eating pomegranates because she wouldn't let us inside the house with them because they're so messy. So you had to stay in the garage on top of the washing machine. I think so you could throw your dirty clothes right in when you were
done.
That's
hilarious.
And she had a wonderful garden, but fruit trees were next door. So luckily we got to sneak next door and pick the trees when they were ripe.
Wow. Yeah, I have memories of – I just like to – like. Just kind of sink my teeth into the pomegranate. I don't even bother, like, doing the thing where you take the seeds out. And that's really easy to do if you do it over the sink.
Yeah.
And, like, in that moment, it's like the whole world stops. And it's just you and the pomegranate. And it's really romantic, I think. So
blood red juice dripping down everywhere.
How about your dad?
He's also a fried bologna guy.
Okay.
Yes.
And a Pop-Tart guy.
And a
What was it?
Waffles.
Waffles.
But he would do, he would make pancakes every weekend and French toast and fried bologna sandwiches. It was sort of his MO.
They, like, you know, love, like, eating the food and are always fascinated by the food that we cook. You know, it's so polar opposite of anything. You know, I have fond memories with Nicole's father, like, you know. I remember one of the first times he took me out or took us out. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And we went down to, what's that hot dog place?
Oh,
by
your
house? It was so, and it's like
really
perfect.
Great. It's
you
like
can
1950s.
Do no,
what is it called?
Yeah, like, Doggy World or something. I don't know. It was, you know, it's kind of a fixture down in the South Bay, and it had been there for, you know, since the 50s. And I just remember, like, having a corn dog and being like, cool. Like, and, you know, on his dime, you know, and it was like, I remember that being like, just kind of perfect.
Hound.
The happy hound. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You're like, we can get along.
Yeah. It was great. And
but they do. They appreciate the food so much, and they're so curious about all the words and what they mean and how everything's made. And
yeah, and the extent in which we, you know, source ingredients. Mm-hmm. And they know that we're, you know, we're like emphatic about that, you know, just the quality and the relationships that we've worked with on to get to that point, you know. But at the same point, like, you know, can throw down a good corn dog at happy hour.
I see. I'm understanding where some of the brilliance is coming from. So I know the story. You kind of set out to you study photography in school, but you set out to really cook and be a chef, and then Nicole kind of zigged and zagged her way into pastry. How did that happen? How did Nicole join Team Stuart and Nicole of State Bird? How did you get into pastry?
Well, I got accepted to the Art Institute of Chicago and was paying my own way through art school, which is quite expensive. So I moved out to Chicago and I needed to get a job the few months before
and
school
started.
And
you had a pretty good scholarship.
I had a good scholarship, but not quite.
Enough. Yeah, but it was like a great, it was good.
Yes. And so in the early days of the internet, when it was basically just classified ads back in California, I looked up online, like, you know, jobs in Chicago, and I found one at a bakery because Stuart had said to me, you love baking so much. I was baking bread all the time. Why don't you could actually do work at a bakery. That would be pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So there was a bakery in Wicker Park that was opening the week we were moving out there and ended up being right down the street from the apartment that we were renting. So under Stuart's recommendation to go in and say to the woman, I'd like to stage, which is a word I'd never heard before.
Luckily, well, we went in there together and like she was a graduate of the CIA
But we walked into the back of the bakery the second day they were open, and there Nancy Carey was with her arm all the way up to her shoulder, stirring sourdough starter, and I was just like starry eyes and butterflies and rainbows. I've never seen anything like this. It is amazing. So somehow I convinced her to let me stage for a month as a mixing all the doughs in the morning. My shift started at 3 a.m. She couldn't get rid of me after a month. Showed up every day early and loved it. And so she gave me a job, and I would work three shifts a day, mixing, baking, shaping, delivery driver. And then by the end of the summer, I said to myself, well, I might just skip school and pursue this as a career. So
wow.
That was that.
And then you ended up joining Stored in the Kitchen
some
point.
Well, I was at that time, you know, I was doing my internship in Chicago. And that's kind of what brought us together. You know, I was in New York, she was in California, we're doing the long distance thing, and, you know, ended up in Chicago, you know, part because that's where she found school, and I was, like, you know, really excited to go there, after, you know, graduation of school, you know, we both kind of just stuck a stake in the ground, so to speak. Hung out in Chicago for a bit, you know, for a few years. And from there, you know, there was kind of, after I did my internship with this same chef that I continued to work for after graduation, which he opened a restaurant called Savran. And I got to open it. It was like the perfect scenario, you know, like I finished school. I'd never opened a restaurant before. You know, I was invited to come back and work with him, and you know, just kind of moved up the ranks, and he was really like kind of a mentor for me. And Nicole, too, with Nancy at Red Hen, we were both sort of like in these really unique places where we were working with people that we believed in, that believed in us, that really were like, you know, not only friends to be, you know, it became, I mean, they're very important people in our lives, you know, 15 years later. And you know, but it was getting time, you know, to think about what the next step was. Mm-hmm. And my thoughts were laid in Europe, you know, go to stage in France. And I was working on setting all those that up with the chef I was working for. And at the same time, an opportunity came through him to go up to this, like, remote area up in northern Michigan, a little restaurant called Tapawingo in a town of about 400 people. And I was sort of like, well, you know, he was really encouraging of it. Just go up there for, like, a season, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, give it a shot. And, you know, I trusted him. And you know, so they the owner, Pete Peterson, flew me up. And I had never left Chicago. So to get on a plane, I mean, other than getting on a plane, go to Europe or something, but yeah. had never left to see the any you know, area around the Midwest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get in a plane, go over Lake Michigan, and it's just freaking gorgeous up here. And, you know, lakes everywhere, lots of greenery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get to the airport, we drive to the restaurant, you know, the owner picks me up, and you know, it's just these rolling hills, and we get to this little quaint restaurant that's right on this lake, and thinking, wow, this is really quite an entrance, you know, what a neat thing. And cooked for him, and really liked the ownership. I really liked the folks behind this restaurant, and they offered me a job, and I was 25 at the time, and Nicole was like 23, 24 at the time, and I thought about it, and I decided that it was a good opportunity.
So you worked there for...
Moved up
How
there
many
was
years?
There for 4 years.
4 years?
Yeah, just kind of a place to put my head down and cook. And the idea was that Nicole was going to come up and join
mm-hmm.
and do what? Like neither of us knew. Wasn't to come up to work at the restaurant, ideally, but we just didn't really have much of an idea. And there's nothing to do. I mean, there is a lot to do, like if you like to hunt and fish and... Mm. You know, and yes, yeah, I mean, it's, but as far as career-minded goes, it's really hard for someone who's young and ambitious. You know, there wasn't a lot of opportunities, you know, up there. Again, town of 400 people. Our dishwashers were like high school kids, you know, who didn't live on a farm. And so, but kind of by happenstance, I mean, Nicole was scheduled.
An opening came up in the kitchen.
Yeah. And Nicole kind of like she really threw herself into it, and we started working together. And she's totally motivated and already knew, like, you know, had the bread baking because she'd been doing bread now for four mm-hmm. years, and just kind of like self-taught and killed it in the bread department, killed it in the dessert. I mean, it was just an amazing thing, and we just really were like collaborating, totally feeding off of each other.
Love it.
And maybe the fact that there was nothing else around really embellished that, you know. We didn't have a lot of areas to go find inspiration. Again, we didn't even have a computer. Maybe we had one. But
we did have a computer, but yeah, it wasn't like there were websites for every restaurant in the world at that time.
So yeah, it was still...
It was more about books and magazines and actually going and dining.
Yeah, and so the dining part wasn't always an equation.
Yeah.
But the books and magazines, and we read, you know... like crazy. We had mm-hmm. also traveled a lot together through Europe, and I did stage in Europe, and Nicole had met me, and, you know, we kind of, you know, really had eaten at Michelin-starred restaurants and da-da-da-da-da, had, like, a lot of sort of experiences together that sort of helped shape styles. And then we just sort of were like sounding boards for each other.
And then let's not skip over, I'm just going to mention that Nicole and Stuart took 3.5 years away from being in restaurants.
Yeah.
But in San Francisco.
That's right.
And then to sort of fast forward to almost now, I mean, I just think it's great that you two have had the time to be away from everything and then had the time to be away from restaurants. Mm. And then you really thought, okay, we really do want to get back into restaurants and we want to have our own place. But then at first you weren't quite sure, right? Like in the first couple months of State Bird being open, there may have been some existential
crises.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is that, like, you know, opening a restaurant, like, it doesn't matter how busy you are. You're just like, your days are long and they're like, you're just working and trying to figure it all out. Mm-hmm. And I think, I know for, you know, I mean, really probably the both of us, we re-entered the restaurant world with a completely different, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a lot of it was just that we had 3.5 years. It's a big gap, you know, so you're sort of re-entering. And there was a lot that we'd like kind of forgot really about, you know.
The styles that we had been cooking at Rubicon for 5 years. We weren't locked into things that we had done before because the service style was so different. And we're like, wait a minute, how do you expedite? Sort of vaguely remember that.
And also, whoops, no one ordered the trash bags.
Yeah, do you remember we didn't even have trash cans the first?
Like, oh, trash cans.
Yeah, like the, you know, it was like right before we opened, but it was like, oh shit, we're gonna put everything. We're like putting them in boxes. I mean, it was pretty funny. And so, you know, obviously we ended up calling, and we had to have a friend of ours come in who had just recently left a restaurant, and he came in and helped with all of that the backbone stuff, just like all the services and such. I mean, we were just so
like, thank God, you know, someone knows what to do around here.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, Ravi.
With a little bit of time left, I think a story that I love is how Andrew Knowlton came in for the first time, mm-hmm. and how all that went down.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing when Andrew came in because part of that 3.5 year hiatus meant we just didn't really open magazines. I didn't know who the players were, you know. I mean, a little bit, obviously, but I didn't know.
He's restaurant editor, Bon Appetit, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. So Andrew Knowlton, of course, works for Bon Appetit magazine, mm-hmm. as the restaurant. He's like the restaurant guy.
Not of course. Some people don't, you know, have their head, you know, stuck in just food world. You know, we all are well-rounded people here, so.
And he, you know, he's also like kind of a public figure. Like he's been on Iron Chef. I mean, he's like a judge, so he's been around. So
he's a BFD.
I had no idea.
Big fucking
who he
deal.
Was.
Yeah, pretty much.
And he was one of the first who came in. It was like, and you know, we were slower as a restaurant. I mean, we were just, you know, it was moderate paced, and he
stood.
He did the standing bar, mm-hmm. and
Not
loved,
the same spot as you stood, though.
Yeah, he was down, like, in the original standing mm-hmm. bar, which mm-hmm. was right on the wooden chef's counter. And we would just put up, you know, set up, you know, plate setups, plate, fork, knife, spoon. And all night, he's just like, and I, you know, as he kind of, my job was is to be, I was the waiter for the standing bar, as well as the expediting the kitchen, and mm-hmm. I'd run back behind the line and cook. So I kind of just did circles all night.
Wow.
And he, you know, had come in and was asking questions all night. And, you know, I, you know, would always try to spark up a nice conversation. Like, wow, you know, do you cook? Because you're asking, you know, these are really smart questions, you know. Oh, is that a sous vide? You know, it's like, well, I mean, you know, there's like little indicators that put up flags, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, no. It's like, oh, just a food advocate and, you know. I was like, all right, cool. And later that night, you know, we had a nice rapport, like, all night, you know.
Right.
And later that evening, a group of chefs, some of them who had worked for us in the past, and, you know, friends, and had come in, and, you know, one of the chefs came up and he said, hey, Stuart, I've been trying to call you all day, but, you know, for whatever reason, couldn't get through. You know, Andrew Knowlton is coming in from Bon Appetit. And I was like, who's, you know, who? And I'd heard the name before. He's standing right there. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Wow.
And so, you know, I went up to him and I said, so you're a food advocate, aren't you? you enjoy cooking a little bit. And
herm, herm,
so,
herm.
I mean, basically his cover was blown. right? Because he kind of – we had this cool thing going, yeah. and then his cover was blown, but it was blown, like, at the end. It was yeah. great. It was like he was going into dessert, and it was just really cool. And, you know, we talked a little bit, and I think he was pretty excited about the meal and, you know, reached out to us a couple weeks later or something, and –
came back in again, too.
Yeah, came back in and, you know, wanted to have it. And, you know, it was just really cool. And I really love the fact that, like, it happened, you know, when he came in. And obviously several months later, he named us, you know, this was, like, probably our third month that we were open.
Mm-hmm.
He named us, you know, the best new restaurant in the country,
mm-hmm.
which totally, like,
yeah,
crazy. I mean, it is like a tsunami hitting your restaurant.
Yeah.
And it happened to us. We sold out of reservations, mm-hmm. and we were 30 days booked, and then we, you know, within just a few hours, and then, you know, we opened it up to 60 days, and, you know, it just changed. It changed the game for us, for sure. It also really elevated us in the sense that, you know, we started really kind of fulfilling the restaurant that we wanted to be.
Right.
We had the traffic. We had mm-hmm. the customers. Mm-hmm. We were busy, and we just started, you know, putting cooks in, and was like, you know what? We're booked 60 days. I'm going to hire another cook. I'm going to hire another waiter here.
Yeah.
And we started sort of expanding, and we just got, like, so good as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that this restaurant really is meant to be, like, operating on this, like, this kind of high energy, you know, just kind of balls to the wall
yep.
busy
yep.
every night. We do our best work there. Mm-hmm. And it really, it's interesting, like, how... you know, how that happened. But, you know, and I just feel like since then, like, the restaurant, the food, the style, the diners, the energy, it's just improved over, and it continues to improve over and over again. And it's really quite fascinating to watch that. And, you know, that's one man's opinion, you know? I mean,
yeah.
you know, Andrew, he does hold a lot of power in that role. It's a very, you know, it's an intense role.
Right.
And, you know, I think a few months later when we were awarded Best New Restaurant from James Beard, it was really quite thrilling for the two of us because mm-hmm. we had been busy, you know. We didn't need necessarily that, but it didn't change that. But what it did is that our peers and our colleagues in the culinary world really thought enough of us that, you know, we would be voted into this and inducted into it.
Quite a moment.
And it was, you know, really like it's, yeah. It's...
Well, one time it's lucky, the second time you're like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really, yeah, it was, you know, I mean, the years that we've spent in the kitchen and, you know, I mean, just it really excited.
And just kind of like creativity really... coming out of a, you know, yeah. some pretty, a less traditional cooking background.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and just the fact that, you know, the restaurant itself is, it's, you know, it's really stands for this kind of like, you know, this really great hospitable place. And it's been like that, you know. It's,
yep.
It's
you neat. Told me it's, you know, to keep it real and to keep on smiling. And then and then you might, you know, sort of accidentally make friends with, you know, everybody, you know, including Andrew Knowlton.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very excited for the new restaurant. You described it like kind of banquet style, more the large plates, the shared family style stuff as a beautiful yin to the yang of the little teeny tiny plates at State Bird Dim Summy, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me today, you two.
Letty, it's a pleasure. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
Some social media info as always. Hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW. That's short for Word of Mouth Show, at Leiti Hsu, LEITIHSU, facebook.com/ Word of Mouth with Leiti Hsu, all spelled out. And Nicole and Stuart are at StateBirdSF on Twitter. And on Instagram right now, they're actually StateBird Provisions with an S, but I have provided some unsolicited feedback, and they will soon be StateBird SF unless unless somebody really weird has that exact handle already, which ain't going to happen. That was Stuart Brioza and Nicole Krasinski, chefs and owners of StateBird Provisions. and you're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on heritageradionetwork.org. We recorded in April 2014 from our partner company, Stitcher. Thanks so much, Stitcher. I'm your host, Leyte Su. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.